seem like a
complicated
movie. Call the House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development to order. Today is the 26th of February. We have a packed agenda with lots to talk about. So I'll start by opening an information meeting on House Bill 2626 and inviting Representative Bailey, Representative Edwards, and Representative Freeman to report. While you're getting settled, let's have a quick summary from our committee. Mr. Barber, please.
HB 2626 requires the state treasurer to solicit investors to finance a new Oregon Department of Energy low-cost loan program to retrofit single and two-family dwellings with energy efficiency upgrades. Requires the state treasurer to administer investor accounts. Names the program the Energy Efficiency and Productivity Fund and requires the Department of Energy to develop and administer the program working with certain non-governmental partners and public and private utilities. Modifies the Oregon Department of Energy's small-scale energy loan program, authorizes it to accept funds from a variety of sources, both public and private, for loans and grants. Also authorizes it to do large block loan authorizations to be split up into small amounts for individual property owners. Defines criteria for contracting, procedures, loan repayment, and other rules. Increases the state treasurer's and the Department of Energy's expenditures limits for the biennium beginning July 1, 2009, and sets a date for reports to an interim committee of the Legislative Assembly regarding the funding and implementation of the program, declares an emergency.
Thank you very much. Representative Bailey, are you starting us off?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Reed, fellow members of the committee, my name is Jules Bailey, and I have the honor of representing beautiful House District 42. And I have to say, you're all much more intimidating from down here. Quite an experience. I come before you as one of the four chief sponsors of Oregon East in House Bill 2626. Representative Edwards and Representative Freeman to my left and right. Although, interestingly, Representative Freeman to my left and Representative Edwards to my right are also co-chief sponsors, and obviously you, Mr. Chair. And the reason that we are here today to talk about House Bill 2626 is that really this bill is the right path for Oregon at the right time. We are here at a confluence of major forces that I think we are all keenly aware of, and that is that our economy is hemorrhaging jobs. Homeowners and small businesses are struggling to get credit and make ends meet, and energy prices are on the rise. And frankly, with global climate change and a federal government that is looking for innovation and has dollars to back it up, Oregonians have been innovators before. Innovation is what we do best, and we can be innovators again. So let me be clear. I believe that we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reclaim our role as national leaders and create a program to rebuild homes and businesses, save energy, bring federal dollars to Oregon, and put people back to work. Oregon East does all that. And if we don't do it now, other states are poised to do it first and reap the rewards for themselves. Now, as you all know, this committee is tasked to address both sustainability and economic development, and Oregon cannot be sustainable without confronting climate change. East will rebuild our economy, and it will meet the challenge of global warming in the way that everyone, from McKinsey and Company to the International Panel on Climate Change, tells us is the most cost-effective way: energy efficiency supplemented with renewable energy. Technology has advanced to the point where we can do more with less, improving our quality of life while being responsible for our children. Now we need to get that technology and emerging technologies in this state into homes and businesses. And East does that in two ways. First, East takes advantage of the enormous pool of investment capital from all over the country that is looking for a place to land, and it channels this capital through the successful Small-Scale Energy Loan Program, or SELP, as you'll hear us refer to it, to provide low-cost loans to residential and small-scale commercial property owners. These loans are designed to be paid back over a long period of time, at low interest rates, through the utility bill or property taxes, and they're designed to transfer with ownership. These funds, combined with grant dollars from the federal government and other sources, provide upfront financing to help property owners make the energy efficiency and renewable energy investments. Second way that East helps us get this technology into homes: it takes advantage of the experience of the Energy Trust of Oregon, consumer-owned utilities with energy efficiency and programs of their own, to facilitate outreach, implementation, and private sector partnerships. This is really about public-private partnerships to get a win-win-win for everybody involved. But one of the big barriers to these investments is the time and information it takes to make sure it's the right job and that the job is done right the first time. East takes much of that burden off the property owner and ensures good jobs with strong standards, quality work, and a safe investment for both the state and the property owner. It's also designed so that as the price of energy rises, you can do more work in the homes. East doesn't recreate the wheel, nor does it try to invent something that's entirely different. It uses the success that we in Oregon here have already had and brings together our resources to bring in investment dollars and achieve more retrofits and more comprehensive retrofits faster than ever before. And if I can leave you with a couple of words in your mind, East is about scale, depth, and speed. It's not just about conserving energy or creating new energy. It's about improving the productivity of energy and allowing investment to happen here in Oregon. Now, you all have attached to your testimony a two-page summary of the concept, and it has a frequently asked questions on the back. I want to note for the record that House Bill 2626 is the start of the conversation, and it is not the end of the conversation. There will be significant amendments. We are fully committed and have already begun the process of creating a work group to make sure we get all the fine points right. And when we're done, House Bill 2626 will put Oregon back on the innovation map, and I urge your support. Thank you,
Representative Bailey. I just underscore that last point. Having been involved a little bit in the preparation to this point, the draft that's before you represented the commendable work of Legislative Council based on what we knew when we began that conversation. It has not kept up with the evolution of our conversations and discussions, so that will continue to evolve. I just want to make sure that was clear. Any questions for Representative Bailey, or perhaps we can hear from the other witnesses? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm state representative in House District 14, representing West Eugene, Santa Clara, and Junction City. After the last legislative session, knowing a lot of the good work that we had done on energy policy here in 2007, I went home and began a quest in my own home to make it to neutralize the carbon footprint. And so I figured, well, I will take advantage of some of these great tax credits that we passed. And so I called up EWEB, my local energy provider, and asked them about what do I do if I want to put solar panels on my roof? And they said, whoa. You don't talk about solar panels until we first make sure that you have an energy efficient home. And we kind of went through some of the dollar calculations for solar panels and the return, et cetera, et cetera. And it became very clear to me that energy efficiency is where I should spend my first dollar. So I had EWEB come out. They did an audit of my home, and come to find out, I had leaky ducts under the house. I had leaky ducts in the attic, and I didn't even have insulation in the exterior walls of my home, which I just bought a year previous. And it was an old home. It was a very old home, built in 43, and had been moved to the current home site. So I started this process of going through all these energy efficiency upgrades, and immediately with each sequential improvement that I did to my home, there was a noticeable difference in the energy efficiency. So then I had the opportunity this last summer to go to the National Conference of State Legislatures Conference on Energy Efficiency in Denver, and along with Representative Witt, who was able to attend, and Representative Cannon. And I came away from there not only more educated about energy efficiency and its role, but really enthused and looking for ways to expand the energy efficiency of Oregon as a whole. Jules and I became acquainted this last summer. He told me about what it was that he was working on, and I knew that was an effort that I had to throw my weight behind as well. And so what you have in front of you today is a win-win-win-win proposition. We're talking about wins for homeowners who will experience lower utility bills over the long term and appreciation in their home value from these improvements. We're talking about a win for contractors because this is going to put people to work. talking about a win for investors that are looking for investments in these troubled times. Talking about a win for taxpayers because it doesn't rely on taxpayer money to finance all of these retrofits and upgrades. And we're talking about a win for the environment. And this is tangible, real-world stuff that we can do today to lower the carbon footprint of the state. I sit on the Natural Resources Sub, and you guys know what's happening with the budgets this session. The budgets are being decimated, budgets that are critical for clean air and clean water. And in this environment, I'm very pleased to be able to bring you a bill and present for your consideration a bill that's really going to do good stuff. It's really going to do good stuff. It's real-world jobs. It's real-world benefits to homeowners. It's real-world real-world reduction in our carbon footprint. And it is quite literally one of the most exciting pieces of legislation this session. And with that, I will turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Reed and committee members. For the record, my name is Tim Freeman, State Representative for House District 2. I won't spend quite as much time as my colleagues here going over this because it's very complicated and we've been working on it for a very long time, and I know there's going to be changes yet to be made. So a couple things I would like to point out is for me, and when I got involved in this, it was a group of us sitting around a table talking about how to create jobs, and that's there was many discussions happening that day, but that's the piece that I really picked up on. And just a couple quick things for those of you that may be a little more skeptical of the amount of information that's here, and it's already been said, there is no mandates in this. So it's an optional program that people can participate in, and there's no general fund cost to it. And I think those two things in themselves speak very well to the concept, and it talks about why it is that it's the right thing to do, and people will want to do it because it's the right thing. We're not going to force anybody into it. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to look at it. It is a very exciting piece of legislation, and I think it's something that can help people both from rural Oregon and urban Oregon. It'll help people with a lot of money, and it'll help people with very little money. So it's one of those things that works for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Freeman. Any questions? Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got two, if that's all right.
True.
Because I was running on kind of thin ice, I think, the last time with you. First of all, thank you for being here. I didn't realize that my colleagues were going to be here, Representatives Scale, Depth, and Speed. And I would like to ask this.
Is the first question who's who?
No, just saying,
okay.
Just welcome.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to ask Representative Bailey just to expound a little bit on, you mentioned, I came in a little late, but I heard parts of this. Just talk a little bit about the work group and its makeup. And then also, are consumer-owned utilities the only utilities, or are there others involved?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam. Representative Gilliam, it's a great question. Let me address the work group part first. The work group will be convening shortly. It is a large work group. There are obviously a number of factors to consider and many stakeholders to incorporate into this. There are representatives from not only consumer-owned utilities, but investor-owned utilities and all the major investor-owned utilities. There are ratepayer advocates. There are folks representing labor, representing home builders, representing businesses that do this kind of work, businesses that produce the materials that are used in this kind of work. There are environmental advocates, we're really trying to bring everybody here to the table to make sure that we've got a bill that we can all nod our heads together at. And at the end of the day, we're really looking to make Oregonians an offer that's too good to pass up.
One group to add to that are also the technical experts who deal with the sale of bonds and financing mechanisms as well. So.
Okay. And then one last follow-up.
Please.
Just wanted to say thank you particularly to you. I know it's hard to admit in public you have leaky ducks. I appreciate that.
It's a problem that happens to us all.
For the Minister, Representative Thatcher.
Oh, gosh, I just love the follow-up from him. Anyway, you're probably all too young, maybe, I don't know. Way back in the day, I remember PGE coming out and wrapping our hot water heater and giving us samples of these newfangled bulbs called compact fluorescents. And that was something that our energy provider, people we were purchasing energy from came out and did themselves. And I heard you, Representative Edwards, talk about how, did I understand correctly, you went to you called it E-Web, and I don't know, is that the electric
Eugene
company?
Eugene Water and Electric Board.
Oh, okay, so that's the electric company, and they came out and did an energy audit for you?
Yeah.
Okay, and so how would, I'm just trying to figure out this is an intriguing idea, I'm just trying to wrap my head around what would be the role of East, I guess, if it existed, how would it have been different in your situation, I'm wondering?
Well, for one thing, I had to come up with all of the money for the improvements that we did to our home, and so we spent several thousand dollars, and you know, I'm eligible for a tax credit for a lot of that work, but I can tell you the tax credit doesn't go that far toward several thousand dollars of work.
And just follow up. So this would create a loan that you would pay back through, and it's yet to be determined whether it be through your bill, your utility bill, or through the other thing, property taxes. Is that how? Okay. And then what kind of follow up? What kind of changes are you anticipating might occur in this bill? Any ideas on concrete things that you see would be added to or taken from the bill as it is?
Thank you, Chair Reed, Representative Thatcher. That's a great question. And first, if I may, I'd like to just emphasize Representative Edwards' point that this bill is really intended not to reinvent the structural mechanisms, but to solve a couple of the challenges that are there right now in the existing program. And one is making sure that people have the dollars to be able to do this, to take advantage of the opportunity that's out there, and that they're low-cost dollars, long-term, low-interest loans. And also, we want to take some of the burden off of property owners. Right now, a property owner has to go out and find a contractor, make a determination about whether or not they want to hire that contractor. They have to think about what efficiency investments they want in their home. Folks could still do that under this program, but this provides a way to give them a little bit more information and assistance in going through that process. To your question about what changes we anticipate, there will be significant changes to the draft that you see in front of you, getting very detailed into specifically the financing mechanisms, making sure that this works correctly with our bonding system. We want to make sure that this is a safe investment for the state of Oregon and a safe investment for property owners. And so we've got to cross all the T's and dot all the I's, and there just wasn't time to do that in the bill that you see before you, but we're working on getting that right.
Okay, one more follow-up.
Sure.
So are you looking to make sure that this is, I guess, perpetually funded through the repayment of the loans and all that, so it would be rotating, essentially? Okay, thank you.
Chair Reed, Representative Thatcher, that's exactly right. This will be a program that, once catalyzed, will be able to fund itself going forward.
All right, other questions? Thank you all for being here. It's an exciting beginning to this conversation. Next on our list, Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. I'm guessing perhaps you want to bring Mr. Cato up as well? Or no, he's going to wait for the other bills. Okay, great. And Michael Salvaggio from the Treasurer's Office, if he's still here. There he is.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy, and I want to express our support for House Bill 2626 as well. I think it's a very important bill. Its purpose is really to increase and accelerate our efforts to save energy, especially in the residential sector. And let me stress how important this is. The Northwest Conservation and Power Planning Council has estimated that we saved 3,500 megawatts over the last 20 years, but we'll need to do that amount again over the next 20. And it's going to be harder because the less expensive energy savings have already been achieved. And that 3,500 megawatts is equivalent of about 7 coal or large natural gas power plants. So it's a substantial amount of energy. an Oregon share of that in the region would be about 40%. And there's comparable needs in terms of the non-electricity sector as well, natural gas and oil and those who use wood. The renewable portfolio standard that you passed last year that sets the target for 25% of our electrical load coming from renewable energy by the year 2025 also assumed a substantial amount of energy savings occurring. And if that energy savings doesn't occur, then additional resources will be required to meet our electric load. So this is very important. The bill, I think, sets the framework for utilizing the skills that a number of us that are involved in the energy saving effort can utilize and help leverage our funds. The consumer-owned utilities, the investor-owned utilities, Energy Trust, City of Portland, and many others are involved in this energy savings effort. And there's plenty of work, believe me, for all of us in this effort. And I think this bill sets the framework for helping to maximize the resources that we have and providing additional resources to this important effort. So it's also consistent with the governor's bills on energy efficiency. And I think that this bill and others that are pending before you could help this session have the same mark on energy efficiency and impact that the 2000 session had on renewable energy. So we're very pleased to support the bill. As the bill sponsor mentioned, there are some changes that will need to be made, and we understand that, and we're certainly happy to work with the work group to achieve those changes.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Salvaggio.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the Office of State Treasurer Ben Westland. Treasurer Westland was not able to be here, but he has provided a letter that, with the chair's indulgence, I'll read into record.
Please.
Dear legislators, it's never been easier being green, and Oregon is, naturally, a leader when it comes to renewable energy and energy efficiency efforts. We are also uniquely positioned to be a significant renewable energy generator because of Oregon's ample wind, solar, wave, and geothermal resources. I fully support investments in renewable energy and efficiency, which bolster Oregon's clean tech industry clusters, reduce energy usage, and create a healthier and more sustainable lifestyle. And when it comes to actually reducing demand on the power grid and reducing our reliance on imported fossil fuels, retrofitting existing buildings is the most cost-effective thing we can do, and it results in almost immediate energy savings. In addition, if we encourage more retrofitting, we will also create jobs and stimulate demand for Oregon-made renewable energy products. That means more work for manufacturers, construction crews, and installers who specialize in renewable energy systems. Finally, I also support the concept of allowing individual ratepayers who will experience the energy and financial savings from retrofitting to use a part of their savings to finance their projects. In the end, not only will we encourage a more sensible energy future, we can also save Oregonians a little green. That's something we can all agree on, and my staff and I look forward to working with you to find a way to make this concept become a reality. Sincerely, Ben Westland, Oregon State Treasurer.
Thank you very much, and let me just take the opportunity to thank you and the Treasurer's Office as a whole for helping us get to this stage. It is, as we've already talked about, a complicated concept with a lot of details, and we would be nowhere near as far along as we are without the help of the Treasurer's Office. So please convey that to the Treasurer, and thanks for your help as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions for this panel? Thank you both.
Thank
very
you
much.
Much.
Next on our list, Andrea Salinas from the Oregon Environmental Coalition and Ivan Maluski from the Sierra Club. Please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Maluski. I'm the conservation coordinator with the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. to here to testify today on House Bill 2626. The Sierra Club's 20,000 members in Oregon and 750,000 members nationwide have a strong interest in solving the climate crisis while creating green jobs and growing our economy. We believe that House Bill 2626 provides an important and timely opportunity to stimulate investments in energy efficiency that will help consumers save money, create jobs, and reduce demand for fossil fuel-derived electricity. As founding members of the Blue-Green Alliance with the United Steelworkers and other labor organizations, the Sierra Club has led the way in supporting policies that are good for workers and consumers while solving one of the most pressing issues of our time, global climate change. We have already seen that through smart investments and forward-thinking policies, renewable energy technology has become a growth sector in Oregon and the nation. While it's important to note that Oregon already has some of the nation's most effective energy efficiency programs, House Bill 2626 seeks to take energy efficiency to the next level by solving the key problem of upfront financing and providing reasonable loan repayment terms to make energy efficiency programs far more accessible than they currently are. Many homeowners have found that even with the generous tax credits and other incentives provided by the state and federal government, upfront financing continues to be a key obstacle for energy efficiency investments for many homeowners. And by making further aggressive investments in energy efficiency in homes and businesses, we can create work opportunities this summer for electricians, HVAC technicians, carpenters, members of the building trades, and more. In conclusion, I will point out the strong level of interest at the federal level in funding significant investments in energy efficiency at this time, as well as the desire for safe investments for sources of private capital. This bill would position the state to collect federal dollars, assemble private capital, increase state bond revenue, and capture the proceeds from a regional or federal cap and auction greenhouse gas reduction program. House Bill 2626 creates an important vehicle for Oregon to capture a range of financial resources to help Oregon consumers save energy and money. Now, I can tell you the Sierra Club is an organization that has staff at every state capital and in Washington, D.C. working on clean energy policies. I can tell you that all eyes are on Oregon to create model climate and energy efficiency legislation this year that can be passed on to other states or provide a model for the federal government. We're excited to be part of this project. We recognize that this bill is a bit of a work in progress and that technical details are being worked out, but we look forward to working with the committee and other interested parties of all stripes to fine-tune this proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please. Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council. OEC supports House Bill HB 2626. As you know, climate change poses a serious threat to our economy and our environment and requires immediate action on behalf of individuals, communities, and the state, as well as governments around the world. Failure to act individually and collectively will have dramatic consequences for all of us. The good news is that right now we have many new, innovative ways to shape a brighter future, building a clean energy economy, creating jobs, and saving Oregonians money in the long term. There are five key areas which we can and need to act in order to achieve our reduction goals. We need to set a limit on carbon emissions, require greener fuels to power our cars and trucks, make our vehicles more fuel efficient, and reduce vehicle miles traveled, diversify our renewable energy portfolio and increase our investment in wind, solar, wave, and sources that have yet to be developed, and finally, make all of our homes, buildings, and communities more efficient. Without a serious investment in all of these areas, we will not reduce carbon emissions to a level that will allow us to meet the 2020 goal of achieving 10% reductions below 1990 levels. Recent U.S. EPA analysis shows that the U.S. building stock is one of the two largest sources of global warming pollution at 31% of the total. In Oregon, that percentage is nearly the same, 30%. In fact, according to the Climate Change Integration Group's final report of 2008, the fastest growing segment of greenhouse gas emissions between 1990 and 2004 was in residential and commercial buildings. Under a business-as-usual scenario, emissions are expected to climb dramatically between now and 2020, with the majority of that growth expected to come from electricity use in buildings and transportation. The Oregon Environmental Council supports the EASE program because it is a significant step forward in achieving large-scale, meaningful energy efficiency while making energy efficiency affordable and available to all Oregonians. Energy efficiency is the most cost-effective way of addressing climate change, and by implementing measures such as EASE, we can reduce those emissions over time by at least two-thirds. acting to implement EASE together with the other energy efficiency measures outlined in the governor's climate package, such as HB 2181 and SB 79, will have the added benefit of positioning Oregon as a leader in new clean energy technologies and putting thousands of Oregonians, engineers, electricians, project and construction managers, energy and water efficiency experts, and architects to work. EASE has significant potential to spur large-scale energy efficiency upgrades and renewable energy in existing homes and commercial buildings. We're excited to be a part of the broad bipartisan group of advocacy organizations and legislators working to pass EASE this session. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this vital program, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Any questions for this panel? Thank you both very much. Next on our list, Brian Krieg and Graham Traynor, please.
Chairman Reed, members of the committee, my name is Brian Krieg, and today I'm representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association and their partner, the Sheet Metal Workers Local 16. We are very much in support of the concept behind 2626. This is a great bill. The underlying principles of it have been explored by both public and private utilities. The advances in energy technology that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years will actually make this program work. HVAC systems that are in current buildings that are over 10, 12 years old, we can replace them out, and you will see the energy savings cover the cost of those new systems. We know this and are eager to get to work on the process. Two significant issues. The original bill, of course, just mentioned the residential component. We know by talking with the bill sponsors that this also will include commercial buildings. We really encourage you to look significantly at that. Estimates up to 40% of energy savings could be found out there in the commercial building segment. That's a low-hanging fruit that we can get to. We can get to it fairly quickly on it. Also, small businesses could be significantly supported by this type of legislation and the upfront funding. I live in Multnomah Village up in southwest Portland. From my house, I can see three small businesses in front of me, all which have HVAC systems, which must be at least 25 years old or more in front of me. In this downtown economy, if the HVAC unit went out on one of the buildings there, I would anticipate that small business in this struggling economy would fail because they're not going to be able to get the funds they have or not really have it in their hands to be able to put a new system in. So we have a lot of small businesses that we can help keep the economy moving, and I think that's really important. And it will also boost jobs in this area. For the sheet metal industry, we're looking outward 6 months, and we're not seeing much of anything in the way of activity by the architects, which are the bellwether for us for work further down the line. It's not bad right at the moment. We see a big hole coming. Getting this program moving, the types of things that can be done, the retrofit stuff, that's very quick to do. New buildings take a long time. Retrofit is fast. Workforce issues and the contractor certification is something that we feel very strongly about. To get your goals of high quality and work and customer satisfaction, you need to have a high quality workforce. It exists in this state and can be expanded on as needed on that. It's critical we set standards for contractor participation that include things such as preference for local contractors and workforce. We're starting to see the Seattle area contractors now bidding and underbidding us at a loss for jobs in this region here. They're seeing us as the last place that there is work nearby. Contractors with proven track records need to be the ones selected for the criteria on it. Meaningful apprenticeship programs, not ones that take the apprenticeship role and slim down the job to just a very small technician role. They need to be a bigger job that will have a long-term future for the folks. That will also provide the opportunity to provide family wages to them and the benefits that go along with it. And then also, one of the last things is the contractors that are selected need to have experience with training programs. If implemented, this program can go on for decades if we do it well. And the organizations I represent, we stand ready to help in any of the implementation process and the continuing writing of the bill.
Thanks very much, Mr. Krieg. Mr. Trainer.
Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Graham Trainer for the record, and I am representing the Oregon AFL-CIO. The Oregon AFL-CIO represents over 225,000 working Oregonians and their interests, including good jobs, health care reform, retirement security, and restoring America's middle class. I want to thank folks for allowing us to be included in the process that has developed the framework that is that has resulted in House Bill 2626. And I will echo a lot of the things that that Brian has said about the contractor concerns that we have and a pre-approval process for contractors that will be taking advantage of the jobs that will be created here. HB 2626 is a step in the right direction. We feel very strongly about that. We are very committed to reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and growing our economy, but we are very concerned about the quality of jobs that this will create. You know, this proposal needs to have wage and benefit standards. We're very, very concerned about that. In these economic times, Oregon doesn't need low wage, dead end jobs. Oregon needs family wage jobs that offer full family health benefits and retirement benefits, as well as career pathways where possible. The one thing I would add to the contractor certification process, again echoing Brian, but the one thing I would include in that would be an agreement to remain neutral in any union organizing activity. You know, with taxpayer investment, we feel very strongly about this. Again, with any state investment, we want to ensure there are provisions to protect taxpayers from non-performance and poor results of these projects. And if a contractor does not perform quality work, energy efficiency goals may not be met, and the expected homeowner savings may go unrealized. If a contractor abuses labor standards, Oregon is not accomplishing its goal of creating good jobs. Therefore, financial penalty or penalties should be included in HB 2626 that are enacted if the performance standards are not met. And lastly, Oregon has an opportunity here with HB 2626 to not only create good jobs that are meeting our energy efficiency and reduction of greenhouse gas goals, we also have an opportunity to lift people out of poverty through this program. Numerous jobs will be created, and again, as Brian said, the hiring of local workers and contractors from these communities where projects are performed is you know, and should be a priority. Additionally, as a state, we cannot meet these green goals on the back of low wage workers with dead end jobs. We must create a training program and fund that is focused on job readiness and pathways into existing apprenticeship programs that will give these workers the opportunity to take the next step in their career development. Again, in a sense, lifting local communities out of poverty. And again, we appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns with the committee and look forward to being involved in the work group on House Bill 2626 in order to ensure labor standards are a part of this discussion and resulting policy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Trainer. Questions for this group? Thank you both very much for helping us get ahead of our schedule a little bit. Next on our list, Amanda Elegant, Paul Gifford, and Marion Haynes.
Chairman Reed, the rest of the committee, my name is Amanda Elegant. I work for Morrison Hirschfield Corporation out of Portland. I live in Washington County. We work in Multnomah. And we actually do work all over the state, and we're very excited to support House Bill 2626. As a multidisciplinary engineering firm focusing on building envelope engineering in the Oregon market, we take a look at how current buildings look today and how they could look in the future with the rehabilitation of their exterior. A lot of the work we do takes a look at buildings that are currently in need of extensive renewal for their envelope, which includes cladding, glazing, roofing, and most specifically what's behind that, the weather-resistant barrier, making sure that everything's installed correctly, making sure we have high, very efficient windows with low E values, and really producing good work that can help the owners of these properties have a more efficient building when they finish investing their money. Given the current economic climate, money is always an issue for these owners, and in order for us to take them the next steps beyond just the exterior renovation and the upgrades that we provide through our engineering, it is great to have an opportunity to get some additional loans for these projects to be able to really produce buildings that don't just take a look at the exterior, but also go into insulating attics, you know, all the things that the Energy Trust currently works with. And as an engineering firm, we see residential contractors all the time that are very excited about this bill. We work with them on a daily basis, and we think that there's a lot of opportunity, and we're looking forward to seeing it move forward. We would like to say specifically that we think that there is great opportunity beyond just the single-family housing. We do a lot of work with condominium and multifamily residential work, as well as commercial properties. We do single-family as well, but there's just so much out there that could be done easily and quickly. We have projects moving forward all the time today that could truly benefit from additional fundings to help get this energy efficiency. And we have a system in place. We're moving forward. And so with this additional funds, we could truly make a difference on our projects that we're starting now. So we look forward to continuing to help with this in any way we can and seeing it passed. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Elgin. Mr. Gifford?
Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. I'm Paul Gifford, and I'm with a for-profit Oregon software startup. We have 12 employees, and we work with cities and utilities to help them organize, launch, and manage community-wide sustainability programs for energy, water, and climate change. Over the past 4 months, Project GX has launched the websites for a new Portland Sustainable Stormwater Initiative, as well as for the Combined Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy Program for all of Sonoma County in California. We started our company to address the significant challenge that all sustainability programs, such as those we're discussing here today, will face: the need to achieve scale, the need to get the whole community involved. So we work on the demand side. Whether the goal is to retrofit and weatherize thousands of homes to achieve new levels of energy efficiency, or to encourage the installation of new solar equipment to reduce our use of fossil-based or carbon-based electricity, the key to a successful statewide energy program here in Oregon will be getting thousands of residents to undertake retrofit projects on their properties and in their homes. Now, this is a tough problem. We're talking about changing behavior. We're talking about educating and empowering me so I have the tools and the resources necessary to understand my individual situation and to help me get involved. And you have to overcome the fact that doing the right thing, for me to take those actions that will allow me to realize those savings on my energy bill, in the end comes down to an out-of-pocket investment, out-of-my-pocket investment, or expense in order to get started. We believe there are three basic hurdles that any successful program will have to address in order to achieve these and to get this mass participation to hit the targeted results. We need personalized analysis. We're talking about retrofits to my home and helping me understand the savings I can achieve on my energy bills. You need to digest all that complicated incentives and rebates and Energy Star rating information and make it easier for me to understand and to understand what my best options are, where I'll get the biggest bang for my buck if I do invest, and what my out-of-pocket costs will be. We need financing, secondly. Help me make this a cash-free decision as possible. I can't write a big check right now and then wait years for the payback through monthly savings on my energy bill. And thirdly, implementation. I have no idea what the steps are I need to take. How do I get started? What's the process? How do I access program financing to help me pay for these things? And how do I find the qualified vendors in my community that I can contact to get started? If you can successfully address these barriers, then you have provided the basic tools and incentives for helping property owners to take action and to move them from I'm thinking about it to I'm doing it. So Project GX strongly endorses and supports EAST or House Bill 2626. This bill will provide the resources and create the sustainable ecosystem that will be necessary. It streamlines and provides the necessary technical and project support for residents and homeowners. It will facilitate contact between property owners and qualified contractors participating in the program. It creates jobs and builds a supply chain that we will need to implement these new programs. Installing solar panels and weatherizing existing homes on the scale we're contemplating here will generate thousands of new jobs for auditors, estimators, installers in every community across the state. It provides the verification necessary to ensure that the projects undertaken and the investments made will deliver the promised results. And most importantly, it addresses the number one impediment to private sector action: affordable financing for retrofit projects. So in conclusion, I believe that House Bill 2626 is a fiscally responsible approach to helping Oregon and our country achieve energy independence, for reducing our emissions of heat-trapping gases, and for creating thousands of new family wage jobs for our state and in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Huber. Ms. Haynes.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, committee members. My name is Marianne Haynes. I'm with the Oregon Business Association. The OBA is very supportive of the concept of House Bill 2626, and we look forward to participating in the work group to nail down the details to make this work. We really see this bill as providing multiple benefits. One, the job creation potential, which we've heard a lot about, getting the upfront financing in place in order to jumpstart folks doing these kinds of retrofits in existing residential and commercial buildings is an important component of that, and we need those jobs right now. Without a general fund outlay, we think this is a terrific way to jumpstart that. It also helps us continue to make forward progress on achieving our greenhouse reduction goals. We're looking at a number of things this session to help us do that. A lot of those mechanisms, building code upgrades and the like, are really geared toward slowing the growth in greenhouse gas emissions coming online from new buildings. This really helps you get real reductions in buildings that are already out there and really lower the greenhouse gas emissions rather than just slowing the increase due to growth. And finally, this will ultimately provide ratepayer relief in the long term as energy costs continue to rise. So we think this is a terrific idea. Again, we look forward to participating on the work group and honing this proposal so that it works for Oregonians and achieves these multiple outcomes. And we very much lend our support to this effort. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this group? Thank you very much. Next on our list, John Chandler, Marshall Rumble, David Slosson, please. Two folks coming forward. Is Dennis Wild here? I didn't notice him in the audience, so no. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in enthusiastic support of House Bill 26 and any progeny which may flow therefrom. A bit of background noise for the committee, with your indulgence. The home builders have now for several years realized that the concept of green building is somewhat of a misnomer. In time, it won't be green building, it'll be building. And it won't be green building codes, they'll be building codes. It won't be green building programs, they'll simply be programs. So we've attempted as an association to grab this issue quickly, get ahead of it. We passed an association policy to become a national leader on the subject of green building. It's a little easier for us than it is for some home builders around the country, simply because the Oregon Building Code is already pretty ferocious, and depending on who you talk to, it's either the first or second most rigorous from an energy efficiency standpoint. So we're starting at a fairly high level already. Because of that, we realize we have something we can offer back, not so much on new construction, because new construction is already pretty green. It'll continue to improve in terms of efficiency. But the real gains are going to come through the remodeling and retrofitting of existing structures. And from our take, we believe this is something that the industry needs to be involved in as heavily as we can. We've endorsed the concept of energy performance scores. There's legislation on that topic working its way through this process. We're working with the Energy Trust on a variety of levels, both as a partner and as a looking on different programs to improve the performance of not only existing homes, getting more builders involved in above code building programs such as Energy Star, Earth Advantage, LEED, but also to actively work towards educating not only our membership, but the general public. I mean, we have 15 local associations all around the state. Most of them have a home show. Most of them have a newsletter. There's a lot of Oregonians that with whom we interface, fewer now than there were a couple of years ago, unfortunately, but a lot of places we can touch people and talk about energy efficiency, about the value of a better built house, a better remodeled house. So we started down this path. Over the summer, I was on the energy efficiency work group that the governor put together. We talked about a bunch of the concepts that are in front of you. And out of that, I got to looking at none of the existing programs that we have are flawed. They're very, very good. They're just not doing enough. They need to be better. They need to have more money in them, more people aware of them, less dependent on self-motivated people calling up, and more dependent on actually getting out in front of people and saying, we can make your house better, we can make your living room warmer, we can lower your power bills. So we started talking with utilities, with the governor's office, with a whole bunch of people. This is not a sandbox in which the home builders normally play, so we're probably fairly annoying in this process. And we were discussing ways we could do on-bill financing, for example, to make it easier for people to get a loan using the utility system already to pay back an energy efficiency product. At some point along the line, I ended up having lunch with, at the time, candidate Bailey, and we sat there in a Thai restaurant and sounded like immense dorks, I'm sure, for a couple hours, probably emptied out the restaurant, talking about green and carbon, all sorts of things that he knew about, and I acted like I did, and he's polite enough not to point out that I was sounding ignorant. Long story short, Mr. Chairman, we are committed to this effort. We think this bill is an immensely important part, not because it does anything particularly new and different and wonderful in and of itself, but because our current programs need to be jostled a bit. We need to recognize that true energy efficiency gains in the state aren't going to come simply on new construction. As was already said, if new construction is by definition an increase in the load, an increase in demand. If we had zero energy, which is doable, it's expensive, but it's doable. If you had zero energy houses, zero energy buildings, all you'd do is slow the rate of increase. You wouldn't diminish anything. The diminishment of carbon greenhouse gas emissions and reduction of carbon footprint comes from getting into the existing housing stock, the existing buildings, commercial buildings, and reducing their power needs, making them more energy efficient. That's where the gains are. That's what this bill will help us get to. A couple final points. We believe that this is not only a very green bill, it's a very job-producing bill. And I don't want to take anything away from the stimulus package that the Obama administration has passed or the ones that you folks just passed here recently. Roads and bridges and infrastructure of that sort are critically necessary. We've underfunded them for years. Thank you for putting more money into them. They take a while to do. You can yank out a furnace and put in a high-efficiency one next Tuesday. You can put insulation yet this afternoon. My membership is hurting badly. We are ready to go back to work. This is not simply a remodeling job for my membership right now. If you need a fence painted, we'd come to it. Housing construction in this state is almost ground to a halt. All around, you've heard from others in the trades, other sorts of people who are affiliated with construction. This is a way to jumpstart that. It's a way to jumpstart it immediately. It's a way to build energy efficiency back into our systems. It's a way to give our ratepayers and our citizens money back on their bill or a more warmer house or an energy efficient home. It'll improve their property values. It sings in the vernacular. This is a good concept. I urge you to pass it. We'll look forward to participating in the work group. Anything we can do to make sure that we're a part of this process, that we make it easier, faster, simpler for people to access, we're all for it. I'll be glad to take any questions.
Thank you very much, and for adding a bit of the story behind where we are. I appreciate that. Please go ahead.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Marshall Runkel, and I am a partner owner of a small business that does energy retrofits. It's named Ecotech in North Portland. I guess I want to start by saying a special thanks to Representative Bailey that I think has gone above and beyond the call of duty in reaching out to all the different stakeholders and involving people from the beginning, even Mr. Chandler, he's involved.
Look for fellow dorks, Mr. Chair.
Not even Mr. Representative Bailey, did you want to...
I just said, look for fellow dorks, Mr. Chair.
More than I would have done.
I took the day off from feeding insulation into an insulation blowing machine and wielding a spray foam gun in a tight crawl space to come down and express my extreme support for the bill.
Do you think that was a good decision at this point?
I'm really appreciative. I really thank the committee for this opportunity to testify. I guess I just wanted to quickly make a couple of points. I know this has gone on for a long time, but I really think that amidst all the different goals of the bill, that it's important to keep in front of people and keep in the front of our minds that consumers are really the need to be the drivers. We really always need to be thinking about how consumers think about this, because I think that that's going to guarantee the best result. The company that I work for delivers a product called Home Performance with Energy Star. That's a national model based that's sponsored by the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy. And we really focus very clearly on individual customers' needs. Unlike cars, houses that are very similar can have wildly divergent energy needs. And it's based on the different ways that the homes have been remodeled over the years, or the different energy usage patterns of the people who live there. So I think that, you know, I guess what I would caution against is a one-size-fits-all type of approach to gaining energy efficiency upgrades, and really listening carefully to the consumers out there. Another important theme of the Home Performance with Energy Star program is that it's based on empirical evidence. You actually measure the air leakage in a home. You measure the insulation levels. You measure the indoor air quality issues. And I think all of these things are linked. And this program is alive in 23 other states, including here in Oregon. There's 33 small contractors that do this kind of work around the state. And I can guarantee you from the conversations that I've had on the phone for the last 5 months that the biggest hurdle for our individual consumers is the financing. So this is, the bill couldn't be more on target. I know there's a crowded committee, but I would lobby quickly for inclusion of a home performance contractor on the working group. I think that you want to have the experience of the people who are on the ground doing this work every day, even if we have spray foam on our pants. I think the other quick thing, marker I would want to lay down is that you need to think about being able to the financing tool being flexible enough to fund other activities. If a house has a high level of radon, a mold problem, an unsafe electrical system, it would be dumb to increase its energy efficiency. And I think that there's a good example in the low-income weatherization programs. They're authorized to do energy efficiency work in people's homes, but they're not authorized to fix a failing roof. So that's not a good result. I think that's it. Thanks very much. I drew a little graph at the bottom of my written testimony that says the point of which is that the more that we design our program to enable consumers to make the right choice, the more successful it's going to be. And I guess that the preface is work by two economists from the University of Chicago that just published a book called Nudge that says that we can really improve our programs by helping people make the right decisions themselves. And, people are smart. If we prevent them with the right opportunities, they'll leap on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Runkle. That was I appreciate the graph in particular. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thank you, Mr. Runkle. I just wanted to sort of bridge the two roles of both being on the committee and having testified earlier and address, I think, the critical point that Mr. Runkle brought up about needing to make sure that if there are structures or properties where additional improvements are necessary, where there are leaky roofs or mold in the walls or radon or for low-income customers, that an important part of this work group is going to be to make sure that we are able to address those kinds of situations and issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. I think that does that is a good point. The work group definitely needs to include people who know what they're doing, because clearly the sponsors of the bill don't yet. Any other questions or comments? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Runkle, is there a range that you could share with us of the common, one of the projects you're looking forward to do here? Can you give us a, like, 10,000 to 30,000? Give us a range.
To do, put insulation in walls and seal the, air leakage from a house rarely get over $5,000 unless you have a really big house. If you want to replace the furnace and put in a modern HVAC system, which I guarantee is a problem in, a significant percentage of the houses in Oregon, I think you're talking about another $5,000 there. If you talk about, $5,000 to $10,000. For the commercial projects, and I appreciate the testimony of earlier testifiers about the importance of including commercial structures, I'm working with a community nonprofit that owns a building in North Portland. It has a boiler in it now. that I think was constructed in 1938 or something like that. It consumes $6,000 worth of oil. Replacing that is with a modern high-tech HVAC system is on the order of $100,000.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you both very much. The last panel, Michael Anderson, Kevin Duell, and Eric, I'm hoping that I don't murder this too badly, Breon. Is that anywhere close?
Yeah.
Great. You guys can decide who'd like to go first, please.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Anderson. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Opportunity Network. The Oregon Opportunity Network is a trade association of 41 community-based affordable housing developers that serve communities throughout our state. I'm here today because my members have long been leaders in green. I think my first member won a national award for green development in 1998, and we've garnered about 15 cents. As has been mentioned in earlier testimony, the country truly does look to Oregon for leadership on issues like this. I'm particularly excited today to talk about this bill because the motives for me being here are the same motives that get my members involved in green. First of all, clearly the largest issue, which is the environmental impact and the need for us to be responsible stewards of this planet and to control the impact that we have on it. The second is that my members do this for the immediate benefit for the residents who live in affordable housing. It is no mystery that the reason that you live in affordable housing is because of a lack of income. Therefore, to take measures that are proactive, that put those families in a better position to certainly do the basics like put food on the table or pay for medicine or new clothes, but then the better ideas, right? Saving for the education for their children and building for a better tomorrow. All hinges on ways that we can help increase the buying potential of the limited incomes they have. And very clearly, reducing utility bills, something that people have to deal with every single month, is something that is immediate, something that is significant, and something that we know makes a real difference in the lives of our low-income residents. Why I support this bill is because those same two issues, this bill brings a pathway for regular Oregonians across the state to begin to get into this exciting journey to the greening of our state, but also to the higher energy efficiency of our state. I think John Chandler addressed very well that there is a limited amount of return that we can gain in reducing our carbon input if we just focus on new development. It's important that there are some measures that we take on new development, but this bill is very exciting because it's a real pathway for existing development and to make the strides that we need to make as a state. Giving individual homeowners and individual business owners a pathway is absolutely crucial. The other thing is the immediate savings that it gives. And in the current climate that we're at, and again, folks in front of me have testified, so I'm not going to go on and on about it, but very clearly, if we can give individual homeowners and individual business owners an opportunity to reduce their monthly bills, we are doing them a huge favor, a favor that then has a spill-out effect on the rest of our economy. When we talk about individuals, they have other money to spend locally in the economy on things such as groceries, clothes for their kids, etc. And then for businesses, this allows them to keep a better handle on that bottom line when so many businesses are being forced into quite awful decisions. So we believe that this bill, this is the right time for this bill. We believe that this is the right pathway. Yes, details need to be worked out, but we're very excited and very glad to be here in support of the bill today. I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Please go ahead. We'll take questions for the panel as approved.
Chair Reed, representatives. My name is Kevin Duell with Interface Engineering, a multiple disciplinary firm in Portland in the building industry. I'm assuming you have my testimony in front of you.
Maybe I think it's on its way.
Okay. Well, there's some charts and graphs. Fellow geek.
Yeah.
Anyway, honorable representatives, as a mechanical engineer with 15 years' experience in the building industry, I support and applaud House Bill 2626. Oregon set reaching goals in 2007 with the climate change
Integration Act, calling for a profound reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in upcoming decades. A possible outcome of those goals is graphed in Oregon fossil fuel use, the first page of the cover here. This guy. The steep drop beginning after next year should capture everyone's attention. These are aggressive yet attainable goals, but this is not business as usual. The primary greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, and as you see in the next chart, Oregon carbon footprint, the residential sector is a small piece of the pie. It might seem reasonable to dismiss it. However, the other sectors are already being addressed by other bills and programs. The residential sector is a special case. It's tough to motivate efficiency upgrades in residential buildings. Housing has the slowest turnover of the group. We replace our cars much faster than we remodel or replace our homes. And increased efficiency requirements for transportation are on the way. Commercial buildings have a faster churn rate. And I'll add that I'm glad to hear this bill may be expanded to include commercial buildings. That's obviously a much bigger wedge. But there's already strong motivation for existing incentives to upgrade systems. Industrial owners have large utility bills and are already motivated by incentives and programs existing and proposed. As the other sectors improve their performance, the residential slice will grow larger unless we take action. So, homeowners tend to delay efficiency upgrades until they have no choice. When their furnace breaks or their water heater leaks, the greatest barrier to energy improvements, the initial cash outlay, is felt most strongly by homeowners, especially in these troubled financial times. This is even with existing incentives. The proportional cost of a water heater in a commercial remodel is minuscule, but in your house, it's substantial. Compounding this, the majority of homes are built under older energy codes, or no code at all, making their insulation, windows, and other energy-critical components substandard. These are rarely upgraded unless the owners undertake a major remodel. This means our existing housing stock will remain energy inefficient without a new approach. We can't build our way out of this problem. It would take far too much energy, money, and time to replace these inefficient homes. And it would be a waste of resources. House Bill 2626 brilliantly addresses this two-pronged problem of energy inefficiency and the upfront cost to correct it. The plan changes the game, making energy upgrades a no-brainer. It creates valuable jobs doing good work. It reduces our impact on climate, our dependence on fossil fuels. In short, it betters the world. Who wouldn't upgrade their house to pay less next month? Or thereafter, forever? I mean, who wouldn't? When acted, this bill would stand alongside Oregon's famous bottle bill as a landmark, putting us yet again in the forefront of sustainability legislation, setting an example for other states and capturing federal attention. Now is the ideal time to move this forward. We must address our carbon output by accelerating energy efficiency, protecting current and future generations from the environmental, social, political, and economic strains predicted for global weirding, the phrase coined by Hunter Lovins. I urge you to engage stakeholders. Inspire them to invest and work through the details, building this roadmap for a better future together. Those leaders, this team, this bill and its sponsors will be fondly remembered in Oregon's history and the nation's history as visionary, innovative, pragmatic, and liberating. Release us from our carbon bonds. Put us again on the forefront. Enact this bill.
Thank you. I would settle for pragmatic, speaking for myself. Thanks for your kind words and for being here, Mr. Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eric Brian. I'm a founder of Oregon Green Solutions. Oregon Green Solutions offers duct and air sealing here in Oregon to customers at a cost fully covered by available incentives. We've had a tremendous opportunity over the past year to go into houses where people would never consider shelling out money upfront for an energy efficiency improvement. We've had great success at expanding our reach here. Over the past year, we've gone from 2 employees to 32. We're now in about 300 houses every month that we're able to make more efficient. Unfortunately, the duct and air sealing that we do is just a very minor component of what needs to be done in most of these houses. Most of them have very insufficient attic insulation. Most have no sidewall insulation. Most have outdated furnaces. There's a ton of work that needs to be done, and a model like ours doesn't work for accomplishing those bigger tasks.
In working with these customers who aren't already considering these major improvements, we see three main hurdles why they don't make these investments. The first is they don't believe it. There's a lot of stuff out there that they can't trust, you know, the windows that deliver 70% savings. So they don't trust the contractors who are doing it honestly and trying to give them a real estimate of what they will save. So that's the first problem, the trust. The second problem is they either can't afford the improvements or they're unwilling to afford the improvements. Big out-of-pocket investments isn't something most people want to make. And the third big one here is most people plan to move. This one strikes me personally. I plan to move within about 2 years, so that's why my house doesn't have sidewall insulation. I know the next person who buys it probably isn't going to even notice that it doesn't have sidewall insulation, and that's why I haven't upgraded it. This bill proposed here addresses all three of these three main hurdles. First, with the trust, it would have a trusted party there to help explain and validate the benefits that would be seen by these measures. That would make a lot of people more interested if they knew they could trust the benefits they were going to see. Second, it overcomes the affordability hurdle. Being able to pay less starting next month is pretty incredible, and that's a really strong incentive to do this. And finally, on if you plan to move, I believe this financing would run with the house. So when I move in 2 years, well, the next owner will pay for the rest of the benefits of the insulation. So I think this is an incredible bill for overcoming the main hurdles we have against making our houses more energy efficient. So I thank you for considering this.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to note for the record that Mr. Breon was kind enough to sign up and testify at the very last moment when here. So appreciate you coming by.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
With that, takes care of our list of people who have signed up. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard during this informational hearing on 2626? Seeing none, let me just... Representative Bailey.
I just wanted to note for the record, Mr. Chair, and for the committee, that the chair here, in his usual customary understated way here, has been leading the committee, but in many respects could have been up testifying and has provided a real leadership role on getting this to where it is. So I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership in making this happen.
Thank you. Let me just conclude then by reminding the committee and the audience. There's already been mentioned a work group. As it feels like maybe we've passed the point where with each meeting we come away with more questions than answers. Maybe we've reversed that trend, and that feels like progress. So we'll continue that work with the work group, and I think it's fair to say, at least my expectation, that we will be seeing 2626 again as we work out the details, and my hope is that we'll be able to move it forward. Representative Cleo.
Mr. Chair, will John Chandler be able to participate in these discussions?
I can't see a way, Representative Galizio, that we could proceed without Mr. Chandler.
Thank you.
Of course. All right, so I'll close the informational hearing on House Bill 2626 and open a work session on introduction of committee measures. We have several legislative concepts before us. Yes, please. Barbara will read a quick summary of the ones before us. And thanks, everyone, for coming to 2626. Barbara.
LC 3058 provides that rates, terms, conditions, charges, and fees for telecommunications services provided by telecommunications utilities electing to be regulated under the Act are not subject to regulation by Public Utility Commission, provides for transition period during which rates changed by telecommunication utility for primary line basic local exchange service are subject to price caps, requires Commission to exempt telecommunications utility from providing certain measures of service quality in required report if telecommunications utility petitions commissions and has met service quality levels in previous 12 months. LC 3232 requires Public Utility Commission to study electricity needs in Oregon since that's January 2, 2012. LC 3567 requires Public Utility Commission to study qualifying renewable energy projects. Sunsets January 2, 2012. LC 3169 requires Public Utility Commission to approve rate changes to compensate public utilities for programs and projects that reduce greenhouse gases.
Thank you. And with the standard caveat that supporting the introduction of these legislative concepts as committee bills does not obligate anyone to support the bills, I would be interested in a motion.
So the motion would be to
introduce them as committee bills.
To introduce them as committee bills.
That's
as
please you.
And, yeah, Mr. Chair, would I need to do each separately, or can I do them together?
Yes.
Okay. So a motion
separately.
Motion to introduce as committee bills the following LC numbers: 3058, LC 3232, LC 3169, and LC 3567.
Thank you. Representative Galizio moves that legislative concepts 3058, dated February 25th, 3232, dated February 26th, 3169, dated February 16th, and 3567, dated February 26th, be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Those LCs are introduced as committee bills. Thank you very much. Close the work session on committee bills, committee measures, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2181. Barbara.
HB 2121 authorizes local governments to establish local improvement districts to finance energy efficiency and renewable energy improvements for existing homes and some existing commercial buildings. Authorizes local government the ability to assess property owner who obtains a loan under this program to cover a portion of the cost of the program. Authorizes the Oregon Department of Energy, working with Housing and Community Services Department, to establish rules to define types of eligible projects and other considerations. Authorizes DOE to provide loan funds to a local government or directly to property owner in a qualified local improvement district.
Thank you. Let's start with Jeff Keto and Dave Vantoff, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Antoff, for the record, and I am the Governor's Sustainability Policy Advisor. I'm going to be very brief. I just wanted to introduce the bill, and Jeff Cato is going to walk the committee through the details of the bill, but just wanted to highlight for the committee that this is one of the Governor's package of climate change bills. The package, as I've talked to some of the committee members before, tries to address comprehensively the aspects of how we need to deal with climate change, both from regulatory investment and efficiency perspectives. This bill, 2181, came through a work group process. There was an energy efficiency work group that met during the interim to try and develop ideas about how the state could move forward in terms of reducing emissions and improving energy efficiency. And financing was one of the key areas of focus for that work group. Ultimately, the work group landed on this concept, the local improvement district bonding concept. As the committee discussed with the prior bill, there's been also a lot of focus around broader financing considerations, and we're looking with interest at the developments that go on with development of that bill as well. I think at the end of the day, the governor's hopeful that this session we're going to come forward with significant new tools for financing energy efficiency. We hope that this will be one of those tools that we work through. So I'll stop with that and take questions if people have them.
Thanks very much. Maybe we could hear the introduction from Mr. Keto and see if there are questions.
Thank you, Chairman Reed and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Keto. I'm Assistant Director at the Department of Energy, and I manage the Small Scale Energy Loan Program. House Bill 2181, I won't discuss the merits as far as the increase in energy efficiency or jobs. I think that's been well characterized in the prior discussions. As far as the details of this particular bill, it authorizes local governments to create local improvement districts for facilitating energy efficiency improvements. What that means is it provides for owners of homes or small commercial buildings within the local improvement district an option to finance energy improvements with the repayment through property tax or property assessments. It's a voluntary choice the owners have. The intent is, and also the assessment would only be placed on properties elected by those owners who elect to participate. Further, the bill states that the State Department of Energy, in cooperation with Housing and Community Services Department, will establish the types of energy efficiency improvements that they can finance under the provisions of the bill, and will, in that process, consider the cost effectiveness of those improvements. Further, the State Department of Energy may provide loans through our small-scale local energy loan program to finance those particular improvements, and those improvements then, that loan repayment will be through the property assessment, again, if the homeowner and or small business owner so chooses. The bill also provides that the maximum debt within a district for the purposes of this, again, provisions in this bill, is limited to 0.5% of the assessed value of the taxable real property within that district. Again, the reasons for this, as explained earlier in discussion on the prior 2626, is there is a significant amount of existing buildings that could benefit. Energy efficiency is actually, in most cases, the least cost energy choice that we have. Much cheaper than building new resources. It provides, specifically what this bill does, is it provides a tool. It provides an additional financing tool that residents, residential homeowners, small business people can use to help them finance and pay for the energy efficiency improvements. And it also empowers the local cities or local governments and the citizens to spearhead that action, which is the creation of the local improvement district. That has to be done at the local level. And it further, of course, throughout the work of any of this energy efficiency improvements, supports significant job creation and sustainability work. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The local improvement districts that I've been involved with have all been having to do with roads, and then the irrigation districts have had to do with those that want to irrigate, all having a common purpose, and usually no one was left out. In this instance, and I think they were formed for the purpose of borrowing, and in this instance, I take it the concept is that a group of homeowners located in a common area would join together, form the district, and then pledge their homes to secure the bonds. Is that the concept?
Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, that is the concept, in that the boundaries of the district are going to be chosen at a local level, and so the creation will be done at a local level, and the choice to participate will be the choice of individual homeowners. So in theory, I would imagine that you would need to get a core group of property owners that want to participate and say, this is a good avenue for us, before you actually go and create the district, so that you actually have some demand and you're not creating it without that need. But yes, you are correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Right, I'm just interested in how one would convince someone to sell this district bonds, because they have to be paid back and there's got to be security for them. So is the security a mortgage or lien on the homes that choose to participate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Vance, the security, from the loan standpoint, what we envision the security will be is we will have a secured interest through the tax assessment of the particular residential homes or businesses that want to participate, and we will have, I don't know the details specifically of what the legal implications of that assessment are. In other words, is it foreclosable, et cetera? Those are the details that we need to learn. But in essence, the security would be through that repayment, and the loan, our funds from the energy loan program would go specifically to those property owners. In other words, we're not. Alternatively, the bill does allow us, if you have a local improvement district who wishes to take on additional responsibility, and maybe they would be the administrator of the funds. It allows us to actually loan the funds to the district, and then the district would basically administer those funds directly to their homeowners or small business partners, and the repayment again coming back from that assessment on the property tax statement. The amount of risk that a district wishes to take, how they wish to participate, will be determined on an individual basis within that district. If I can add a little a background on that, we've had loans before with cities for water savings. In fact, there's some cities southwest of Portland, small ones, where they wanted to do water savings measures. The city elected to sign on the dotted line that said, I promise to pay. But in essence, all the repayment is actually coming through the water bills of citizens who elected to participate. In other communities, a participant would come to us and say, I have a project, and the city isn't even an integral part of it. They individually would come to us to do it. So there are choices.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. One final question.
That's fine.
The point I'm trying to reach is how the bondholder would recover in the event that one of the homeowners didn't pay his or her taxes. If I recall correctly from the irrigation districts that use the same device, there's generally a foreclosure action against the party that fails to make the payment, just like one would foreclose a tax lien. And if this is the means that the loan is going to be repaid, I would assume that is the device that one would use. I'm just asking if that's a correct assumption.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, no, that's not. We issue State of Oregon general obligation bonds, and we have a pooled loan program. And so we as an agency in our program is responsible to pay the bondholders as a separate transaction from the borrowers paying us. So, in essence, if one borrower doesn't pay us, we hope the other borrowers will pay us, and much like a bank, and we'll take the pool of funds we have available from all the repayments of all of our loans to make all of our bond payments.
So that prompts a question for me. I imagine there's a variety of answers to it, but in general, how many individual homeowners, you mentioned that they would all have the individual choice to participate or not, how many do you need to make a viable local improvement district?
Mr. Chair, we don't know. I don't know the cost at a local level to form a local improvement district to kind of make that economic guess on, you know, how many do you really need to have this particular vehicle of being able to repay on a property tax assessment viable for those homeowners, instead of having them say, well, I'm just going to go to the program direct and just borrow as a loan and make payments directly, and I don't need a district.
Do you have a sense of scale, though? Is it 1,000 homes, 10,000 homes, or any kind of sense?
Mr. Chair, I would guess that you'd probably, I don't think it's that high. I mean, depending on the district, I would think some districts wouldn't be that difficult, but I would think you'd need you could probably do it less than 100, I would imagine. I mean, in the tens of homes at least, you know, I'm just estimating. I don't think
you need a really
large number.
I just wanted a general sense.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you. Representative Gilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I had some questions, but your testimony has helped alleviate some of my concern, but I do want to get a couple things clear because, you know, it's the language sometimes that we worry about in these. First, I'm very interested in the volunteer part of this, so to be sure of that, do all the property owners, are they all assessed or just the ones that have the loans? You know, you said you could opt out, but the bill, I'm looking at Section 2, Line 4, I don't know if it really spells that out or not, that it's just those individuals within the LID that are involved in the loan are the ones that are involved in the payment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gillum, in Section 2, 4, where it says a local government may assess real property within the district, only if the property owner obtains a loan under this section. It's very specific to the B. The assessment is basically for those parties who participate with a loan. You could likewise have people participate and pay their own money, mm-hmm. or where they wouldn't get a loan, and so they wouldn't participate. It is very specifically a repayment mechanism for the loan.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair. So if you're in the district, this new district, however we form that, and let's say you've already done your updates, you have an energy efficient home or business, you're not going to be involved in any kind of an assessment or thing like that.
Correct.
And so maybe we might be able to spell that out. Would you be open to spelling that out just a little bit more in the bill?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, yes, and I believe that there are other parties that, again, these are knowledgeable parties in the securities, in the bond industry, who have suggested some fine-tuning for clarifying those things. I know it's been pointed out that the clarification of how the word share in number four has been asked. What does exactly does share mean?
Good. That's helpful.
Yeah.
And one last one, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. If you've already answered this, I apologize, but does the prospective loan applicant pay for the audit, or does the LID?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, either way, there are some municipal utilities who potentially would be participating in this that might provide audits for their clients. In certain areas, the Energy Trust may provide audits. So there are, in some cases, that might be passed on to the property owner. It depends on what the funding is available. Obviously, we look for audit funds whenever it's available to provide that service. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, what? Pardon my ignorance on this, but what would be the mechanism for this? Sometimes we do work groups. Sometimes we wait for amendments. What do you anticipate some fine-tuning coming to you?
At this point, Representative Gilliam, I'd be interested. I'm aware of a couple of folks who are interested in amendments. I haven't seen them yet, so it would be my intention to wait and see what materializes. Perhaps there are others who are aware of other ones, so we can see which ones we know about, assess those, and see if a work group is necessary.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
But other questions? Thank you both very much. We have a few other people who have signed up to testify. So I'd invite Brock Howell and North Cheatham forward, please. I appreciate you sticking around, Mr. Kettle. These bills often uncover other technical questions, so if you can, we appreciate that. And we have just a few minutes and a remaining bill, so if you both could be do your best to be brief, I would appreciate that, too. Please go ahead, Mr. Cheatham.
Thank you. I will cut to the chase here. There are others here with more knowledge than I have on the technical details of the bills involved and so forth. But I will speak on what I know the best, and that is I am the owner of a historic building in the Hood River, Oregon, 16,000 square feet commercial building right downtown. And I'm looking at what this bill could possibly do for us. In the last 10 years since I've owned the building, I've made a number of energy efficiency improvements on my own. They've cost me plenty, and I've been able to only go at it in a very staggered way.
Excuse me just a second.
Yes.
I may have missed it. Did you already state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to cut to the chase.
I appreciate that.
The introduction went away, too. My name is North Cheatham, okay?
Thank you very much.
Do not represent any particular interest group. I look for energy bills that affect and benefit the most number of people.
Sorry for the interruption.
Please. Okay, did anybody hear that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, the concept behind HB 2181 is both simple and innovative. As a building owner, a commercial building owner, it would take in my building because we're less than 20,000 square feet, and it would grant huge benefits, not only to the building owner, in this case myself, but also ratepayers, the idea of contractors that would have just an enormous number of, amount of projects in the pipeline as a result of this, and also make it much easier for Oregon to comply with the 25% renewable power standard by 2025 without relying on large centralized greenhouse gas emitting facilities. But let me go back to this building and what I can do with this bill as I understand it. We have been sequentially replacing windows in that building. The windows are over 100 years old. They're single pane. They didn't even know what low E was at the time. But we've been doing that. We have some more windows to replace. The windows cost me about $400 a piece to replace, and I've been sequentially doing this for a long time. This would allow me to go forward and with no additional cash outlay and replace all the windows that remain. We have a inefficient and unreliable HVAC system on the roof, one of three. The difference between replacing that unit with a standard unit and one that is ultra-efficient would be $2,000 or $3,000. I would assume the difference between those units would be covered by this kind of a local improvement district funding loan that would, again, require no cash outlay at all. We have a massive storefront on the most busy street in Hood River, and it's all highly inefficient, single-pane glass. It would cost me $20,000 to $30,000 to replace that. But the aspect I'm looking at the most is what it would do for the energy efficiency of the building. I have already improved the energy efficiency of the building probably 30%. I could go another 10-15% perhaps with the benefits that would accrue from this building. Now, let me back off and say, that's just me. I'm a building owner. The real benefits to this bill, 2181 as I see it, is not to building owners, although, of course, it is tangible, but it's to residential people throughout the entire state. When I look at the amount of energy that is expended in inefficient structures, it's just mind-boggling. And here is a situation where everyone can benefit from the same bill. That's one of the reasons I came here today to testify on behalf of this. I've given you a few examples of what we can do for one building, and this bill would be funded through sources independent of the state's strapped general fund, and eventually funds used would be repaid by the beneficiary. In other words, everyone wins. Please pass 2181.
Thank you, Mr. Chin.
Cheryl. Thank you, Chair Reed and members of the committee. My name is Brock Howell, and I'm an advocate for Environment Oregon, which is an organization that represents 30,000 members statewide to protect clean air, clean water, and open space. And we're part of a coalition supporting HB 2181. And we're doing this because increasing energy efficiency is the least expensive and biggest impact measure we can have to reduce our impact on global warming. So based on our internal studies, new energy and efficiency programs can reduce Oregon's carbon emissions by 3.9 million metric tons by 2020. So bills like this that provides us with new incentives for energy efficiency are definitely part of that metric for being able to reduce about a quarter of our between our baseline projected emissions and where we need to get to with our goal, about a quarter of the way there. And so we think that's a vital step we need to make with these types of energy efficiency programs. Local investment districts are innovative tools for delivering energy efficiency to residences and small businesses that couldn't otherwise afford to pay for the large upfront capital costs. With the legislation of HB 2181, local governments will be able to designate areas which property owners will be able to apply for energy efficiency projects. There was a question earlier about how much it would cost or how many people would have to be involved in the LID to make it viable.
It would be my view and understanding of this program that the number of people that's viable is directly related to just the number of projects you have. So it's no more costly or least costly based off of the number of people you have in the system, because basically the same people who are paying for it are the ones who are using it. And if you have any questions on that, I'm happy to respond. And besides defraying the upfront costs, this has two other benefits. One, the property owner can be able to pay it through the assessment over a period of time, and the energy savings can help repay that. And two, the interest rates of a municipal bond, in this case, is much less than what they could do in typical cases, which would be either through a business loan or through a mortgage on their property. And that's why this is very key, because it's actually reducing the cost of these projects for these people. So with that, we urge you to pass HB 2181.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the panel? Thank you again. Thanks, Mr. Cheatham, for making your regular trip to see us. Two more folks who have signed up for this bill, Andrea Salinas and Bill Cross, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. Thank you. For the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the Legislative Director of the Oregon Environmental Council. OEC is in support of HB 2181. OEC is also a member of the Apollo Alliance Board, and the Apollo Alliance also supports HB 2181. I won't repeat a lot of what has been said from my earlier statements about two of the biggest challenges facing Oregon right now are global warming and the impacts of that and our economy. And you have my statement in front of you. And energy efficiency, as Brock stated just a minute ago, is the most cost-effective way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and manage our rising energy energy costs. HB 21 included with the larger climate package that would provide the additional resources and investment necessary to make energy efficiency a central part of energy and climate planning over the next decade is critical. This bill addresses one of the most problematic challenges facing the energy efficiency sector today, and that's financing large-scale energy efficiency upgrades to existing residential and commercial buildings. HB 21 provides a mechanism for getting funding to Oregonians through public financing, an important factor in a time of shrinking private capital pools. Moreover, low-income households that often don't qualify for weatherization loan programs would be able to participate as an entity with a local improvement district. HB 2181 is thus an important tool in our arsenal of various solutions to combat global warming and revitalize our struggling economy. We're happy to support this piece of legislation as it moves through the legislative process, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Before I turn it over to Mr. Cross, and you have one more note, Mr. O'Connor would like to testify, so perhaps you could come up while Mr. Cross goes ahead. We'll try to be efficient with our remaining time. Mr. Cross, please go ahead.
My name, for the record, is Bill Cross. I'm here today on behalf of the BOMA, Commercial Building Owners and Managers of Portland, and we are supporting this bill. You've heard all the reasons why trying to provide some funding options makes a lot of sense from an energy efficiency standpoint. We'd like to maybe suggest an amendment that would make the bill even better. There's a limitation on commercial buildings of 20,000 square feet, and we're not certain why that was put in there. There may be valid restrictions as to why you'd want to keep it available only for smaller commercial buildings, but on the other hand, that might be something worth exploring for those communities that establish a lid in areas where we do actually have some larger buildings. A couple of the representatives, Representative Gilliam, raised a couple of the questions about trying to maybe clarify some of the language as it relates to voluntary participation in a district if one is adopted. And I guess I would be happy to work with the committee administrator or the committee on maybe just trying to provide some clarification there to ensure that we're moving forward with a voluntary kind of program. But the intent is very supportive, and we're pleased to be here in support of it.
Thank you. it appears, Representative Gilliam, we've uncovered another need for some clarification, perhaps another amendment. So please continue that conversation both with our committee administrator and perhaps with Mr. Keto, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, for the record, Tom O'Connor with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association, and I would like to offer our support for this bill. It's a little bill. It's maybe not as flashy as some of the ones that you've seen before, but I think it has a lot of potential. It would give us an additional tool, I think, that would be really has the potential to be really useful. Many of the municipal utilities currently offer loan programs to our customers. We have the authority to do that. They are either, most of them are 0% loans. We buy down the cost of the loan. We do that either through the utility on the bill, or we do it in conjunction with a local credit union or bank in the community as a partnership. Both of those models work really well. This would involve payment on the property tax bill as a voluntary mechanism. That sounds like something that we could then add on to our existing programs to cover particularly some of those measures, perhaps that property owner would want to string it out over a longer period of time. So this looks, with the some of the changes that have been suggested, I think this could be a useful tool for us, and we would be happy to work with folks on pulling it together.
Thank you very much. Questions for this group?
Yeah, actually,
Representative Thatcher.
You bring up an interesting question that you have, and I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Tom O'Connor.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that, Tom. You mentioned that you already have some programs in existence. Do you see that those programs would phase out and be replaced by this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, no, I don't think so. A couple reasons. One, we would be, as the utility side of the local government, we do have the weatherization, programs already designed, so this would be a financing mechanism that would help finance those measures, just as some of the things that were talked about with the previous bill. So we have we have those kinds of programs. We also do have those existing loan programs. I think it's pretty hard to beat a zero interest loan, and I think that for some measures, the homeowner is going to want to use that piece, but perhaps there are other pieces of this where this loan can go on top of that. One quick example would be often windows are not deemed to be cost-effective from a strictly energy perspective, but most homeowners, in order to get them to do weatherization, we're looking for walls, floors, ceilings, where the real bang for the buck is, where it really reduces the energy. But often the homeowner will say to us, I really want to upgrade my windows. Well, maybe they're not quite cost-effective from our perspective as a utility, but under this program, we could add that in, and you could have a package that would really work. Maybe okay. That's a way that it would fit together.
Okay. Well, it's interesting to hear. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you for coming. And looks like we have some further conversation to go on House Bill 2181. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2181 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2182. And Barbara, if you could give us a quick summary, please.
HB 2182 amends statute to expand the eligibility of alternative fuel projects to use the State Department of Energy's small-scale energy loan program, expands eligibility from vehicle fleets and fueling facilities to include other kinds of equipment fueled by alternative energy sources, increases the term of service for members of the Small-Scale Local Energy Project Advisory Committee from 2 to 4 years.
Thank you.
Yes, sorry.
Jeff Keto and Ramona, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record again, my name is Jeff Ghetto, Assistant Director, Department of Energy, and I manage the small-scale energy loan program. I'll only take a couple of minutes here on this particular one, and I think that's what the time allows.
Thank you.
This is a measure that I actually originated myself, so I should know something about it, I guess. Our current authorization for eligibility for alternative fuel projects basically is fleet vehicles and fueling stations. And the change is actually because of the changes that we have in technology and what customers are really requiring of us is to add basically equipment to this. And it would be equipment or vehicles that use alternative fuels, and they also need to produce lower emissions than conventional vehicles, and also facilities that and the equipment for production of alternative fuels or to operate the equipment or vehicles. So we're really just adding equipment to the list in a couple of the areas. Basically, there's a growing need for alternative fueling solutions, and these are out. Some of these are outside of vehicles on the roadway, highway vehicles. A couple examples of what this bill would help us finance or let us finance is dedicated equipment needed to process agricultural waste or forest residue to make cellulosic-based fuels. Also, some of the new plug-in hybrid or electric vehicle equipment. Again, they're not vehicle fleets, and they're simply not fueling stations, but there's plug-in, add-on equipment to convert vehicles, or even industrial applications, industrial motors, stationary power units. So technology is basically simply ahead, quite a bit ahead of our statute. The Business Energy Tax Credit, another program within our department, already can process applications looking at this expanded definition of alternative fueling projects. And the other one is the Advisory Committee. Their current term is 2 years. All of our committee members have multiple terms. It takes a number of years to actually kind of get inaugurated into their work and what they do for us, which is extremely valuable. And we're recommending that we increase their term to 4. And I'd like to say that all of our current committee members are in agreement with that.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
For the record, my name is Ramona Baker with Environment Oregon. I'm our Energy Policy Associate, and I'd like to thank Chair Reed and members of the committee for hearing my testimony in support of HB 2182, and I'll try to keep my comments fairly brief. Environment Oregon, as was already mentioned, is an environmental advocacy citizen-based organization, and we're supporting this bill because we know that to tackle global warming, we will need to explore several ways to power vehicles and the other technologies that were just outlined. We need to look into ethanol, biodiesel, cellulosic, and electric, just for a few examples. This is why expanding the loan program and the definitions as outlined in HB 2182 is critical. The production of ethanol remains an energy-intensive enterprise, requiring fertilizer, active management, processing, and transport that significantly reduces potential to replace fossil fuel. For that reason, we think it's absolutely essential that we do look beyond ethanol towards biofuels as a whole and all these other technologies that can help us fuel the future. A study by the University of Minnesota found that corn-based ethanol provided only 25% more net energy than required to produce it. In contrast, soybean-based biodiesel provided 93% more net energy than required to produce it. Thus, opening this loan program, this incentive program, to biodiesel vehicles will allow Oregonians to shift to a biofuel that is more efficient in terms of reducing our global warming pollution. So for this reason, Environment Oregon urges you to please pass HB 2182.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No? Representative Thatcher?
I don't know if it's a question or a comment or what. You can answer it if you feel like it. I get a lot of constituent mail talking about how biofuels are potentially competing with food supply. Mm-hmm. And do you think there should be an incentive to have that competition set up?
Right.
22.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thatcher, we have authority right now under a separate part of our statute to fund alternative energy projects. Those are ones that actually produce an alternative energy. And we agree with you that we want to be moving beyond the current ethanol into the cellulosic based, into the agricultural waste based ethanol. We need to be doing that. This particular bill is looking at those components that by and of themselves, they don't actually produce energy. They're not an energy producer, nor are they saving energy, which are the two traditional types of projects we do. They're kind of in the middle. In fact, a lot of them might be even produced here in Oregon. They're the kind of very interesting technology stuff that we can add on and have a net benefit by whatever they're attached to, if you will, pieces of equipment that are parts of a larger package. So while I agree with your ethanol, and we do agree with that, that's not actually affected by this bill.
Helpful.
Okay.
So maybe I can help a little bit. It seems to me this is sort of the supplemental equipment, maybe a retrofit sort of thing, something that could go on to something else that would help make it more efficient, more effective. Do I have that right?
You clarified. Thank you.
Sure.
Right.
Correct.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm about to ask probably a dumb question. My understanding is that this is intended to apply to modification equipment. I look at line 8 on page 1. It says alternative fuel project means equipment or vehicles that are modified or acquired directly from a factory and that. And I'm not an attorney. I'm wondering, does this allow for a SELP loan, for example, to buy a car that could run on biodiesel?
Repeat the line you're on, Representative.
Sorry, line 8, page 1.
I think the hesitation, as Representative Galizia points out, indicates it's not a dumb question.
I'm just wondering, my car broke down at the beginning of the week, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering how we can get this passed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bailey, if the committee would like to each buy cars, we'll call the fleet and then we'll do it. That's a very good question. We basically are not in the business of car financing, and we don't intend to be in the business of car financing, and that is not the intent of this particular bill. Actually, the way our terms and bond structure work, it probably wouldn't facilitate car financing anyway. Could somebody actually, in this case, we use the word vehicles, plural, to try to avoid that, so people can't come in and just say, I would like to finance my vehicle. We have people who want to finance vehicles, multiple, but they're not actually complete. And this would be business reasons, but we've never actually, I don't think in my 11 years in the agency, I don't think anybody's ever asked me, can I finance a vehicle? So it's a question, but I would truly try to avoid that.
Very good. Thank you.
Make me an offer.
Yeah. We're quick on time, so if there are any other questions, thank you all for coming. Perhaps there's a little more conversation about that to come before we work the bill. So close the public hearing on House Bill 2182. And before everyone escapes, Representative Witt was kind enough to offer us a legislative concept that we can introduce as a committee bill. So I'll reopen work session on introduction of committee measures and recognize Representative Witt. If you want to give us a quick summary of your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. LC 3204 is an attempt to reduce the amount of architectural paint that is, in essence, laying around our garages and our barns, to collect that paint, to recycle it, and offer it up again as a recycled product. And I think it's an opportunity for us to diminish another potential hazardous material and turn it towards a positive end. Also talks about collecting information on the volume of paint collected, the volume of paint has been recycled, and how that has been transported, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your willingness to let the committee take that on. Would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to move the adoption of LC-3204 as a committee bill.
Thank you. Representative Witt moves LC-3204 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Representative Gilliam didn't speak quickly enough. Without objection, so ordered. LC-3204 introduced as committee bill. Close the work session on introduction of committee measures. And if there isn't any further content for today, we'll adjourn the committee. Thanks very much.
That was very,
a lot of work.
Oh, this was a work.
Yeah, he